Just a little more time is all we're asking for. Just a little more time could open closing doors. Just a little uncertainty can bring it down. Nobody wants to show you how. So if you're open to your own, you can never surrender. And if your life won't lead you home, you can never surrender. And when the night is cold and dark.
Wow, I love that song. I never get tired of hearing that song. Anyway, good evening and welcome to the 33rd Never Give Up podcast show. I am Bailey Smith, your host. I want to remind all my listeners, we are still in October, which is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And I've been trying as much as I can to bring awareness through my posts, through my shows. So we will touch on that this evening. I just want to say I feel so blessed through my advocating, through my guests I've had on my shows, to have had such incredible shows, to have met so many incredible people. I really, truly have been blessed, and I don't take it for granted. So, you know, every show is another show that I'm honored to do, and I'm honored to have the guest on. And, you know, I really made some good friendships, and you know, I really consider all my guests part of my support system, my domestic violence, mental health awareness family. So thank you, guys. Thank you, Marianne, for always having a backup plan for me. My guests did not come through tonight originally, and obviously everything happens for a reason, because tonight is incredible, and I'm honored to have her on. So I am going to introduce our guest. Her name is Barbara Dertina. Did not ask her how to pronounce her last name, so I apologize if I did that incorrectly. Now, thank you, Barbara, for being on the show tonight. She had something else to do, and she gave that up to be on the show tonight. So thank you, Barbara. Barbara earned her degree in early childhood education. She has lived in a number of different places in the world and loves to experience different cultures. She was able to realize her dream of being a stay-at-home mom after stabilizing her marriage and finances. After being married 20 years, she found herself in a high-complex divorce, trying to raise two daughters as a single mom. This situation changed the course of her life. She became the targeted parent in the throes of parental alienation. Been navigating through this for over 20 years. Oh, Barbara, I feel you. She lost one daughter to suicide at the age of 15 and is speaking out on the collateral damage of suicide as well as parental alienation. She believes that PA is the root cause of her daughter's death and the estrangement of her other daughter and her grandson. Her passion is to create awareness of parental alienation and to save our children from being put in the middle when separation divorce happens, and to champion the rights of our children to have full access to both parents. Our children and the targeted parent are the collateral damage. Her business is Wellness Matters, You Matter, LLC. She focuses on physical health through nutrigenomics as well as emotional health, resiliency, and trauma-guided recovery. She has released her story, Please Remember Me, Mom, in the book Ignite Possibilities, which she just became an international bestseller in 8 countries in May of this year. Wow. Barbara, I really can't wait to dig in. I know we connected the other day, and I'm so on the Never Give Up show. Please feel free, guys, to call in 516-531-9643, 516-531-9643. We'd love to hear from you. It's always nice to have people call in, show their support. We are also live right now on Blog Talk Radio, the Friends Network, / Friends Network, and it's the Never Give Up show. I am going to bring on our guest right now, and let's welcome Barbara. Welcome.
Hi, Bailey. Thank you so much. What an introduction. I was like, who is that person?
My pleasure.
Gosh, and, you know, I felt such synergy, and, you know, that's how this grows. I really appreciate you saying what a network you're creating and the relationships and the synergy and connection and how your network was, you know, referring one person to another and having each other's back, because our mission is very, very important. And I think that over the years, you know, women were quiet and sort of hushed. And I'm so grateful that now people are speaking out. And for me, I know that I was really feeling isolated and alone. And when I was originally going through a lot of this, there was no internet, there were no cell phones, and information was very sparse. And so this work is just so important because our children are at risk, you know, and I hate to feel like I belong to like 3 different clubs, you know, parents that lost a child, survivors of suicide and the collateral damage, and then this club of parental alienation. And I never could have imagined my life going this way. But I don't know about you. Looking back, I see childhood wounds and things of that. So discernment on picking partners or what we're attracted to, I wasn't as discerning. I didn't know you're familiar with what you know. And so to tell you a little bit about my story, and I look forward to people calling in. And that's how we all learn. That's I learn from each person that I hear from. And I really hadn't spoken out for many years because I didn't want to hurt my other daughters, you know, our relationship or family members' relationships. But when you are silent, you're sort of complacent too. And those relationships really aren't thriving relationships. And I know that there's a bigger mission from me, so I really appreciate this platform to be able to speak out. You know, I got married when I was young. After my sophomore year in college, I always thought I'd be a career woman and have this whole career. But my parents cut off all my funds from school when I was dating my former husband. And so I realize today making decisions through fear or other types of things aren't always the best decisions. But I thought I was going to have this exciting life. We moved to the Virgin Islands. You're going to start tropical fish, diving for tropical fish business and such. But the bottom line was I was trying to really go away from a controlling mother, and I really married my mother in a very different package. I was thinking that it was completely different. And that's why I said today, I've always been able to see behaviors and things, and that's why I went into early childhood education. But a lot of people mask things. And we also, I don't know about you, but as I started reading some books like Harville Hendricks, Getting the Love You Want, I remember that so clearly. I mean, it was a long time ago, but when we were trying to even work our marriage out, that you marry something familiar. And so even though I was trying to get away from behaviors that I didn't feel comfortable with in my family, and, you know, my parents did the best they could. They came from New York and the Bronx, and they were children of immigrants, and my dad created a business in Miami and in the 60s and all this stuff, but really I think there's generational trauma and generational patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And so since I married so young, we didn't have children for like 11 years, and I really wanted to stay home and raise my children and for us to be financially stable so that I would have that luxury. But times got really, it was always, you know, my ex-husband's dreams and goals, and I would put up with things, and then I would sort of raise up, and I'm like, you know, I have a life here too. And I moved a lot of times for his career. And gosh, when I look back now at all the things, supportive things that I did, it's pretty amazing,
yeah.
You know, and I'm a loyal person and I'm a partner. But when I started seeing that he was sort of putting me down, I had two daughters, and my second daughter was a really adorable little girl, but she was a very conflicted, even as a toddler, she would have tantrums, and I couldn't figure out, you know, my background, as I said, was early childhood education. So I kept trying to find patterns of behavior and things. But it was she was a very conflicted type of personality and really, really brilliant. And actually, I wanted to get a divorce when my first daughter was 2.5 before Aaron. But I ended up having a second child, and then I was like, okay, I don't know if this happens to other people. I'm sure it does.
Mm-hmm.
Let me get her out of diapers. Let me get her into preschool so I could work, you know, thinking of how to support two children. I had given up my career for my husband's career. And, I was just really miserable. And I know that for me, I stayed too long. And I don't know if I think in my gut, I was afraid to divorce this man, because being the controlling type of personality, just everything was his, everything was a put down, it was very emotionally abusive. And I was afraid, you know, it was not easy to get away from this person. I went through three attorneys, mm-hmm. and the third one was, I'm sorry, but you married him. There's only so much we can do, because he was so narcissistic. But he was a really involved father, and I never would have thought that things turned out the way they did. I didn't see the signs. I didn't see and understand narcissism. Nobody talked about it then. I mean, I got divorced in 1997. And so the words then were controlling. You didn't have the internet.
I got married in 1995. 1996. 1996.
Oh, my God.
See, I don't remember anymore.
Wow. You baby. And also, my parents really didn't want me to marry him. So I was like, I'm not getting divorced. I'm going to make this work. You know, I realized I denied it for a lot of years. But, you know, I couldn't leave until I knew I really tried everything. But when only one person in the marriage is working, it doesn't work, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that is your story, but and I just thought, I don't want my daughters thinking that they could be treated like that. And my former husband was a college professor. He went back for his PhD. I went through all the poor years, the developing years, you know, the sacrificing years. And I think as a professor too, you become even more narcissistic, because you get new students every semester, they're following my every word. He was in the graduate school of business, and I could see that progression on and on in this artificial world where you're tenured, you're not going to be fired, you're not really living like other people are living.
Right.
Which I sort of miss that intellectual world. It's nice being around a college. And so finally I got, I it's so funny, I complained to all my friends, I was so miserable, but I just felt like I was going up and climbing a high dive, but I just was afraid to jump off, and I come back down the ladder. And several of my friends divorced before me, and it really did a lot of damage to me staying so long. I don't know about you, but you know, I was so depleted and beaten down by the time that I left. And so making good decisions and that sort of thing is really hard when you're burned out and exhausted and beaten down. And so that's one thing that I've been putting together, a course. I did it as a beta course before the pandemic, because you can't dive deep right when you're getting divorced, but I feel like I would love for women to know with children things that I wished I had known then, that you can touch upon lightly to help mitigate the trauma. Because I think so many, especially women, we stuff the trauma. We're there for our children. We're concerned how we're going to survive, and we really end up having a lot more trauma to release later, which is not easy. So the first week I do is, you know, self-care. And I don't know about you, but especially when you've been in an abusive relationship, the unworthiness, the aspects of that, we don't really always start getting lower and lower, not taking care of ourselves and putting everybody else first. And insights into our children, and I know I felt
can
so
I,
alone.
Can I stop you there? I'm going to stop you there for a minute. You know, when shit hit the fan with me personally,
yep.
I was lucky in a lot of ways. I was in the best shape of my life. I had always had an image issue, so I was extremely thin. Probably I was close to being the thinnest I was. I was training for a half marathon,
wow.
I had a lot of self confidence. And when the best thing that ever happened to me, what saved my life, was that I found the group therapy. And for a year and a half, you know, I would go in there and I would meet all these different kinds of people. And you're right. You know, they do teach you about self-care. And self-care could be so many different things. But I would look at all these women and I would just see either women living in a shelter or women so broken or just, you know, I would always come dressed up. And most of them would just, you know, I always put on, you know, I always got anywhere I went, I put on such a facade. And, you know, even there, I didn't have to, but I would. So, you know, everybody handles things differently, but I would see all these women who were not taking care of themselves because they were unhealthy, you know, and I was unhealthy.
Right.
I was trying to pretend on the outside, you know, at least let me look good, let me feel good.
So
you know,
I think exercise is you, but inside you were sort of broken, but outside the appearances, you looked really together.
Yeah.
People
would have never known because I had my confidence broken.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
That was another thing that bothered him so much was because I was always very consistent when it came to taking care of myself and working out and all that stuff. And, you know, he had such flip-flops. So, you know, my point is that the thing they teach you when you get help, you know, and you have to get help right away. And I got help before my children got help. So I was in a much better place to get them help and be there for them. Is self-care. And, you know, if you are not in a good place,
you're not
you can't
good
help
for
anybody.
Yeah, you cannot help anybody if you are not. So it's interesting, when I wanted to get divorced before I got pregnant with my second child, that's how I was. We had built a home in Orlando. We had I'd lost my baby weight. I had pink sunglasses on, and I thought, I'm enjoying this summer, and then I'm out of here. And I think having a child made me more confident to leave. And so I had started doing some different things. Like, I bought clothes for my daughter, two sizes too big. I started preparing, like, little things. Some people had told me to do some things. And that helped me have confidence that I'll be okay for a year or whatever. But then having another child, and that put me in a different situation. Mm-hmm. And staying there with the abusive thing. So that is, I love what you shared.
I'm going to stop.
Yeah.
Don't forget where you stopped. I want to give out our number again, 516-531-9643. We'd love to hear from you, 516-531-9643. And guess who's on the line, Marianne? Yeah. Welcome.
Hello.
My friend.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Marianne.
Hey. I loved your book.
How's it going?
Okay.
You know,
I forgot to
put the information about. Do you have a link to send me on that?
Is
it being sold specifically anywhere?
It's being sold on Amazon, but it's a compilation book. So it's sort of nice to buy it individually, but it's on Amazon. Yep.
So when the show's over, if you could send me the link and I'll add it. And then
Wonderful.
The other thing I mentioned. So, Marianne.
Yeah.
Talk.
Yes. Oh, I'm here.
Barbara was going to say something.
I was just going to say that it's so nice to see people calling in, and so nice to have community. We had a first clubhouse room today, and it was global. And, you know, I wanted to say that just being able to speak out has made connections, and I feel that I've come out of the closet almost in writing that book. So with you mentioning this book, that was a big thing, to be able to tell my story and overcoming it. And I really feel, you know, like I said, out of the closet, and what freedom that is to be able to tell your story if you're okay with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Marianne knows what that's like, right?
Oh, yes. Yes, it's different. It's difficult, but it's something that needed to be done.
Done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I'm in the difficult stages of writing mine. You know, it's when you write it the way I'm doing it, and not as a journal, or not as you're going through what you're going through, you're digging deep, and you're going backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's going to be a success. Marianne knows, I have this amazing person writing it, and, you know, when I have to go through my mass of stuff to share stories, you know, it's hard. It's very hard, you know.
It brings up a lot of trauma.
Well, not necessarily trauma, because for me, the man I was married to is dead. You know, the person that lives on, I don't know that person. I don't think I ever knew the person I was married to. So it's, and a lot of it is, the trauma part is what happened, the things that happened to me, or the signs that I missed. Or like you said, we didn't know all those years ago.
Right.
You know, I thought I had a pretty okay marriage. I mean, you know, so anyway, this is not about me. So, Marianne, any questions for Barbara? I know you guys just had a show together not too long ago.
Yeah, I just got on your show and I was listening, and I think Barbara said something like you marry someone you're like familiar with, like your mother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then if you didn't get along with that person, then you're like marrying the same person, mm-hmm. which is like what
yeah,
I
well,
what
I
did.
Yeah, well, they say why does an alcoholic marry other alcoholics or something? Because they're deep down, there's a familiarity,
it's trauma bonding.
Mm-hmm.
Trauma
yes.
bonding, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's for sure.
Even though
that's
not what you want, you know, intellectually,
or
you're seeking.
It's a vicious.
Yeah.
It's a vicious cycle. It's the vicious cycle that
mm-hmm.
we are trying to break. You know, it starts,
mm-hmm.
like you said, generational. It's a generational situation. It's a generational abuse. A generational, you know,
mm-hmm.
everything that we
mm-hmm.
used to. And that's what we're advocating for, is for change, so that our children
right.
don't have to go through that. You know, it's unfortunate. We probably won't see it with our children every single day, that my children don't go through, don't start the next, another generation of it. Because,
well,
you know,
I
put
was,
so much effort into it.
But if I can interrupt you for a minute, because I'm so, you know, I'm farther ahead. And so, me too, I'm feeling so much of that. And then my daughter, when she got married, and I was, now my daughter's 37, when I would be at our house, I would feel the same energy. It reminded me of my marriage. And then now they're divorced. And so I'm seeing that pattern. And it's breaking my heart. Seeing that happening, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you're so right.
No. Well, that's why it's so important that at a young age, you know, my youngest is 17 and a half, and so it's 12 and a half, 13 and a half, 14, 15, 16. It's almost 6 years or five full years that his father is not in his life. And, you know, I've gotten him help for years, almost from the beginning. And it was consistent and off, and then consistent and off. But I would say the last 2 years, it's been very consistent. And he complains, oh, I have therapy again. I'm like, you don't understand how lucky you are to have therapy. You know, you have someone that will listen to you, that will help you, that gives you advice. I said, there are people that we know in our lives, or not in our lives, but people we know that did not get the help and had trauma as a child. And what did they do? They created a disaster as an adult. It doesn't go away. And, you know, you have to admit to yourself all the things you went through. And the only way to really do that is to help. So I always say that.
But you know,
Go on.
I know Marianne, and I know because when you're dealing with parental alienation, sometimes those choices are taken away from you. So
right.
I could see my little toddler. I was trying to get her help from being a toddler. And it was like, well, your mother
right.
thinks there's something wrong with you. But there were things and patterns, and then going through divorce situations, it was like, you don't have to talk to anybody. You don't tell your feelings. I couldn't get her in a car to go to the counselor. And then I couldn't get her to speak. I had a counselor come to my house. And then she had to,
mm-hmm.
I had put a timer on. And then it was like, well, you can't watch this TV show unless you share. You can't, I spent all my money. He wasn't going to participate in that, but that you have somebody at the other end training your child
right.
not to tell or talk about their feelings.
Right.
So when you're dealing with that situation, I even got her court ordered for counseling, and he blocked her from getting the help. I was like a crazy person trying to save
mm-hmm.
my child. I mean, I never thought she would take her life, but seeing the situation and knowing that this is childhood trauma, and this is we need third party here so this these children can have someone to talk to and have an alliance, because they're being thrown into a high conflict situation, which it was a mutual decision to get a divorce. So I was really trying to think as gentle, not make waves. He even wanted me to move away to a rental property we had in Vero Beach, one block from the beach. And I go, no, they need their dad in their life. I don't want to take them away. I mean, it's just ridiculous when I don't know this man. Like you said, I don't think you necessarily know somebody until you divorce them. What do you think, Marianne? Are you on there?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know, because, I mean, he was showing his colors. I just wasn't seeing the... I just didn't
right.
get
mm-hmm.
it until it was, like,
right.
too late.
Yeah.
And I had to get a divorce because he was just getting, mood swings constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And, I didn't want my kids to pick up his anger management
yeah.
problems.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I was
mm-hmm.
going to be breaking
right.
the cycle by divorcing
mm-hmm.
him. When
mm-hmm.
what really happened was, I mean, I had to fight with him to get the kid to a counselor. So we had to do it through attorneys, like really.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily my attorney said, pick that one. And luckily that was a very good counselor, which really
mm.
helped with the anger management problems. Okay, but, it was just ridiculous what they put you through. Like, does it have to
yeah,
be
we were court ordered. We were court, because he thought everything was his. We started with nothing. I was a student, and he had been he was an adjunct, student teacher, really, at 25 with a CPA and an MBA, teaching all the beginning accounting classes at FSU, actually. And, so we started with, blocks, concrete blocks and boards for our shells. I mean, everything we got was together, but everything he felt was his. But, we even got court ordered to a high conflict divorce program in Orlando. It was under armed guard at the courthouse, and they had four sessions for your children. So mind you, this is after I had that counselor coming to my house. I fought for 5 or 6 years to try to get counseling, and they were like, if someone's not going to talk, the counselors were even saying, well, I'm sorry, but, she's not going to say anything. What can we do? And then he blocked them. There were 4 weeks where they talked with the children. And I'm like, yes, this is because they said they started putting the children program in there because they saw the children were falling through the cracks. And I went, oh, thank God. And he blocked them from going. And it was all about mediation and how to communicate with each other. It was brilliant. Here's this man that's a PhD, professor, and at the end of every class, I had taken several of his classes, a survey, how's the class, what did you learn? And, of course, they did this after this incredible course with 3 mediators, and he said he learned absolutely nothing. And they made us role play with other couples, and the other couples were, seriously, you learned not one thing what he said that he learned. And I'm like, yep, that's what I'm dealing with. And then we were supposed to have a 6-month follow-up, and my daughter took her life in between that time. And I thought, oh, no, now I have to go to this follow-up. And in a way, thank God he didn't come. But everyone was very, very angry because, he didn't participate in this, even being, he wasn't even willing to be open enough for any help in any regard. And my children were in such danger, but the courts, Marianne knows this because her emphasis is on the legal system being such a,
mm-hmm.
So broken, that they couldn't catch. And here's this man, all suited up as the professor and, very stoic. I mean, that should be a clue, actually, that there's not any caring there. And so it was just, and I think it scared the people thinking, oh my God, you know what, this could happen to us. And then I came back several times as a speaker and talking about you don't know what's going on in your child's mind, and this is life or death, and you're playing wrestling that with your children. And so if you don't start getting along here, and I know I changed some people's minds because the moderator, you know, came running out after my talk, and I was like, oh, my God, this man, there's something to work with here. And, you know, so speaking about this and bringing it out, but I know Marianne really understands this, too, when you're dealing with parental alienation, you're afraid to speak out for many years because the studies and the research shows that it's very counterintuitive. And so you set these kids off. They've been radicalized. They're not really working in a normal capacity, right? And so the protocol has been, you know, tiptoe around. Well, I've been tiptoeing around for 20 years, and I also had a daughter take her life. So it's like, what enough, you know? And I thought our relationship was healing. I was in my daughter's life, staying at our house, taking care of the baby. I was there when he was born, you know, but it was a very strained relationship because I'm the bad parent, you know. And but I just, you know, and then when you have a relationship, you have to set, you know, sometimes then I'm thinking, okay, now I need to set a few little boundaries here. And she just really went off. And because it was all a facade, really. Once they're sort of radicalized in the parental alienation world, it's very difficult. So,
Marianne,
you know, I never thought my life would be like this.
I want to go backwards a little with you when after Marianne talks.
Oh yeah, I'm so sorry that all happened because I was always worried that was going to happen to one of my kids. Because he'd fight you on everything, you know, the ex would fight you on everything, and everything had to be done their way, and this caused your daughter's suicide, and I was worried this was going to happen.
Well, you know, we can never say what the roots are, but as the years have passed and I see what parental alienation does, I really do believe that that was a major contributor of what happened because she didn't need all this conflict. She was already a conflicted child.
And that just made it worse. You know what I mean? Him fighting you on everything. Like, really?
It's so sad because, like you said, in the end, the collateral damage is the targeted parent and the children. And
yes,
what does it matter?
So here you lose a child. Okay, you would think you'd have a wake-up call when your own child took their life. Would that change anything in how you go forward? But you know, when you're dealing, we just did this Clubhouse talk a little earlier, and so some people got on there, and even one was a therapist. They don't understand the dynamics when you're dealing with somebody of this kind of caliber and personality disorder. Most people then would say, oh my gosh, this is a wake-up call, or what should I do different? And Bailey, like you were just talking about writing your story, you know, it's been a lot of years for me. And so a lot of the things, I've worked on a lot of healing and done a lot of work. And then writing it, it's like, oh yeah, then that happened. Like I forgot about a lot of things and the recall. And then looking at it is like, whoa, knowing what I know now and the person I am now, it's like, why did I put up with that? Or, you know, that's my part of it, is going along with some of it. But I have to remember when you're dealing with a personality like that, it's very hard to get along unless you go along with them. You know.
It's crazy. I would like to go backwards in your story. But before that, I want to give that our number again, 516-531-9643. Please join in. We have an incredible guest tonight. You really inspire me, and you're a real fighter and survivor and warrior, because I can't even Look, I've had a child try to commit suicide. I can't even fathom. I mean, I dealt with so much with different mm-hmm. facilities and everything. And that's really how I started advocating for mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm. you know, I my mind never even allowed me to go to what if, you know, and, mm-hmm. you know, along the way, I've had a child that I'm still dealing with, but has cancer, and it's, thank God it's stable.
Mm-hmm.
But the anxiety right now for the last year has been out of control. Our children are mm-hmm. really suffering, and, you know, as mm-hmm. much help as you can get, you get them. And, you know, I'm lucky I had custody. I got full custody of my youngest,
mm-hmm.
who's now 17 and a half, and I think he's listening. Mm-hmm. Hi, Joey, if you're listening.
Hi, Joey. I have to say, I'm all about the children. That's why I'm speaking out, because my love is for children, and the children are the ones that really get caught in the middle of this, and we
mm-hmm.
you can't explain the love we have for our children, right?
Oh, my kids know that I love them. So, you know, they know that my show is very important to me. And, you know, I go in my room for 2 hours on Tuesday night and, you know,
mm-hmm.
You know, try to have dinner ready beforehand. And, you know, they respect it. And I'm very open about it. And, you know, they're very supportive of all my advocating. And I'm very supportive of the things they're into and they're doing. I always get off a track, but the point is that in that sense, I was blessed. Okay. I got full custody.
Mm-hmm.
Was it easy? 5 years alone with all my kids, 3 kids, two
mm-hmm.
of them dealing with health issues. Hell no. You know, I mean,
right.
and I was trying
right.
to take care of myself and get, and heal, you know, I had started my healing process, so I was a step ahead of them. And to this day, it's not over. You know, I'm still
yeah.
dealing with my oldest last year decided to go out of the blue after everything I did for him, decided to go to his father that he was abused by and witnessed abuse, you know. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'm very grateful, you know, whatever, I'm not going to say anything, but, you know, sound a little bit of parental alienation now. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, in my situation, I knew I could not stay with this man, but I did beg him to get help and be a parent with me. I did. I begged
mm-hmm.
him. And he left the state, and that was it. And then, of course, you know, I'm the alienator. No, you walked away.
Mm-hmm.
You left this family. You left me with a mess.
Because that's what they try to do. They
mm-hmm.
yes, that's
but
the
I was
thing
smart
I talk with the collateral damage.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. I was smart.
No,
I was smart
complete
enough.
Your thought.
I didn't know anything about parental alienation at the time. All I could tell you is that I knew that I begged, and I have I have emails and texts and messages. I begged him to get help. I tried
mm-hmm.
to get him help. You know,
mm-hmm.
I did everything I could, even when we were separated, and I was, and after everything he did to harm me and punish me, I still, to the last minute, begged him to get help. Up until that last year or 8 months that he was in the state of Florida, and I, you know, I said, please, the kids need you. You need to be a father. I need you to help me with the business. And in the end, no, you're not taking me back. I'm out of here. And you know, and I know that no marriage is perfect. And when
mm-hmm.
you have mental illness, you see things differently. You know, you
mm-hmm.
things are twisted, and you see things from a whole different eye.
Different lens.
I don't know, brain.
Mm-hmm.
A different lens, right. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I will not say that I was perfect, but I know I was a good wife and I was a good mom. Nobody can ever take
right.
that from me. No one.
That's one thing I live with, is that I put myself in a lot of difficult situations trying to help my daughters. And my psychologist at the time had said, if there's anything else I could think that we could do, we would do it. And he was exhausted trying to, my ex-husband wouldn't talk or communicate on any level. So he would only write letters. So that was like a one-sided thing. And then when I had this particular psychologist that was supposed to be a unification, but you can't unify if the other person will not cooperate on any regard. He goes, this is exhausting. And I said, I know, I've been doing it by myself for 7 years. How do you respond back to really narcissistic behavior? Like he would try to compose a, I started bringing my letters to him to open because it was always one-sided. But I was like a crazy person, but I kept putting myself and trying to find help for my daughters. And I live with myself knowing that I just did everything I could that was in my power. And it sounds like you were too. And I wanted to ask you a question, Bailey, then your son going back to his father, because sometimes things have to happen like that for someone on their journey, a child on their journey to understand or to have that out of their system. And I was curious how that impacted everything.
Well, obviously I was heartbroken and I was angry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And with a lot of therapy, I was able to realize that he had to go through, he had to, first of all, he needed a father figure. He was desperate. He wasn't in a good place. And I was actually in the process of trying to get him help again. And you know, then I had to go to New York. My son was having, my middle son was having surgery again. And I came back and this kid picked up and left. And, you know, everything happens for a reason, okay? And I can't really get into details about it right now, but I don't want to be live about it, but you know, everything happens for a reason, and I have tremendous faith that he will find his way back into my life. I encourage him and his brothers to have what to do with each other, because I don't want another generation of my ex, like their father, whose family was so dysfunctional. Nobody talked to each other, or nobody talked to their parents, or I mean, craziness. I don't want that. I want to break that cycle. So I'm very glad that my kids, you know, have what to do with each other, and I hope that they can
keeping that relationship
connect
and those lines together for them is really, that's a very important thread there.
My divorce is to their father. My you know, they should not divorce each other. You know, they you know, this is not about them. And then I have to remind myself that for 21 years I was sucked into this manipulation and brainwash and control.
And that's exactly the time I was married to, 21 years.
Yeah, I said, how can I blame this kid for being sucked in and manipulated? He's a child. I mean, he's a young adult, and that's his dad, you know? So, you know, as soon as I started to think of, as soon as I started to, you know, look at it that way, because I said, where did 5 years go? All of a sudden disappeared?
Mm-hmm.
5 years, you were here, I took care of you. That one didn't.
Well, you
all the damage,
instilled,
everything.
You know, coming as the educator, you instilled those values. You instilled that in him. You created that core, those core values. So be grateful that, you know, really you fed into him and helped create who he is. So he, at this point he still is with his dad. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah,
is that correct?
He's he's getting older and mature, and eventually he'll go out on his own. I mean,
yeah,
you know, it's only a
yeah.
matter of time, you know, and I will be patient, and, you know, whatever happens will happen.
That's
and I
mature.
Just pray that the light is seen. And for you, Marianne, you know, I hope
mm-hmm.
that when your kids are away from the toxicity,
right,
they will see the light. And for you, Barbara, and for all of our listeners out there who's in that kind of situation, you know, it's the hardest thing is when they're very young and you're out of their
mm-hmm.
life, when they're very, very young and you're already taken, they're taken, so they're raised by somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it's very, very difficult because, you know, if they're being raised by an... Yeah, go on.
I was just going to say, you know, it's sort of a unique situation, and Marianne knows because I've actually, it's so great having these connections because I've actually reached out to her and asked her advice a couple of times because it's like the protocol and whatever. So when my daughter got married, before she got married, I was involved in her life, and, you know, they were living together for a while, and we started, you know, for a number of years, and then the baby was born. I was there when he was born at the hospital. I would drive up to Orlando constantly and take care of him and stay at her house. And then they were separated for 6 months, and I even stayed at their house. I didn't know they were separated. He came back that night or whatever. And so, you know, being built on not having communication or openness and secrecy and all of that. But then the other day, this is just recent, some things happened, and I'm like, this behavior is worse than when Erin took her life. This is back to, and then I realized my daughter's been divorced for 2 years, so she's back in the throes of a relationship with her father. So that whole thing, I was like, what's going on here? Why is this, you know, I thought she's been inviting me to travel with her a couple years ago, and the baby was 3. And now he thinks I'm not even his grandmother. So you think that you're beyond that, or you think they've grown out of that. But that's why now I'm really speaking out. Before, I didn't want to hurt that relationship, and now I realize it's a facade, and there was no relationship. If you cannot have a discussion or know what's going on or be able to talk something through, and I've done all this work over 20 years. My daughter hasn't done the work when her sister died. And, you know, I want to share another thing that was just happened to me that was seriously dramatic. So a couple of points I want to make because I'm dealing with suicide and then dealing with parental alienation. And recently I posted, I'm sorry, but suicide is easier to deal with than parental alienation because there's closure. Mm-hmm. It's not the closure I wanted, but you have grief, you have a loss of life, you have to go on. But when you have constant cruelty coming at you for years on end, like it was just my birthday, not a text, not a call, and it wasn't even like that years ago. This is even worse, and this child is 37 years old, now teaching that behavior to a 5-year-old, you know, and I'm just, how do you navigate this later on, and you have hope, and you think things are better, and then, so that's why I'm sort of telling my story, because this is so unpredictable that everyone's story is so different, and I think being so far into it, I need to share what the dynamics can look like. And the second thing I wanted to share that just happened to me, I wrote my story. I've been at peace with losing my daughter, and since it was a compilation book, it's short, and you have to, you know, select what points you want to bring. And my goal was to make impact and to make impact about parental alienation because people don't even know what it is, or they think that you're crazy or you're bad, that's why they're all being against you, or there's so much misinformation, or people like teachers and other people are contributing to it unbeknownst to them because you could be enabling that alienator against the mom, mm-hmm. and
And then you're just
friends,
so guilty.
They don't know it.
Yes.
So
recently on Father's Day, so I published that book, bestseller. I'm at peace that, okay, you know, gosh, I wrote my story. I didn't even tell my family I wrote the story because I got to tell my truth. And I know they all have a take on things and seeing all the chaos. And I don't know what your story is with that about family members and all of this, but I just thought this is my story. And it was an investment to do it. And so then my niece on my former husband's side, I was very close with his family. But then he said, you know, don't we talk to my family? And blah, 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 blah. I was afraid he was going to hurt the children. And Marianne knows this part. My niece, who's 57 now, reached out to me. And I hope it's okay that I'm sharing this thing about her. But do you know, she shared with me, and she's has a social worker's degree and a master's degree. And she saw my daughter acting out. And when she visited my former husband, she was at his house. And she knows what he's like. And she said that she saw, first my daughter was acting out horribly, and then she came back for a second visit. And she saw on the mirror in the bathroom that my daughter used the words, "I want to kill myself, I want to die." And that it looked like they were being washed off, but you could still see all the words. And she confronted my former husband. And she said, this child she needs help. And she didn't know that I had her court ordered for counseling. I was trying to get her help, and he kept blocking it. And he's like, oh, teenagers, blah, blah, blah. She was totally acting. She wasn't into drugs, but she was acting out. She was brilliant. My daughter was so brilliant. And she started researching places, and she needs to go to a wilderness camp, or she needs to be away, like someplace. And he just poo-pooed everything. And that a month later, she came back, and my daughter had taken her life. She came back for the funeral. And so I
never knew
this man. This man knew that my daughter wanted to take her life. He did not get her help, and he did not communicate that with me. Now, I didn't know this for 20 years. I just thought, oh, my God. I mean, I've lived with this situation for all these years. My daughter took her life 19 years ago this month, last week, as a matter of fact.
God.
So I thought I was at peace to hear that this man knew that she was contemplating this, and he didn't even – that's how the depth of parental alienation is. That you would be willing that your child would die rather than get that person help. You know, how do you fight that when you don't have that information?
This was a relative of his that told you this?
My niece, yeah, his sister's daughter.
And she wouldn't come forward and testify? I would take him to
court.
Well,
because she didn't, you know, let's say, so this is 20 years ago, and you know, it was like, don't you communicate with my family. And when you're shunning people, right, Marianne, they don't have contact with you. You're cut off. So they don't know what you're doing. They don't want to get in the middle of a situation.
Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
How people will just keep quiet?
And she said that she's never spoken to him since, and she has beaten herself up, not, you know, because when you're in that, you know, when you have these family dynamics, people don't know what to do or say. And you know, so now I'm like, what other information is out there that I don't know? You know? I mean, and my other daughter thinks she calls him her hero, and he's raising my grandson, and I don't have access to them. It's
so
like insane.
So your daughter is upset with you because you've come out and spoken. Is that why she's not talking
to you? I don't know. No, this was before, so now I am speaking out because I don't know if she knows I'm speaking out about this, but
she just
knows
stopped talking
the last,
to you?
Yes. Just started shutting me off. without any explanations. What happened was I was at her house and she was upset about divorce, and she was started, she, I teach online, and she came in and she was interrupting me while I was teaching, and I teach overseas, and I could lose my job, and I said to her, you cannot interrupt me, I'm online being filmed, and I'm teaching online, you know, I told you I have 2 hours that I'm teaching, and then I'm available. And so I thought, let me set a boundary, and I said, this is not okay, I could be losing my job. And so then she went ballistic, and she said, I'm trying to keep everything in. And I said, and she has stomach issues, and she's a nurse. And I said, well, that's the worst thing that you can do. I'm being the mother. You need to talk about this. And then she told me to get out of her house. And, you know, when I'm trying to be a mother, to get, like, you can't even help your child because they won't, you know. And I thought, this is ridiculous. I'm being abused by my daughter, that I cannot even say, you cannot interrupt me while I'm online teaching in the other room. And then I'll watch the baby as long as you want. But I don't know about you, Marianne, but they're taught to abuse you. And so then it's okay, where do I set a small boundary? We've been together for 6 years. If you can't set a boundary, a little boundary with someone, there is no relationship.
My kids then, and I.
I was just saying, then to tell her, you need to talk about this. You can't hold it in. It's not okay, but she can't listen to anybody else's point of view, and or allow me to be her mother because she's so. By doing so much of this work, and I've done trauma work and helping other people in emotional intelligence and such. You know, I've learned these things from masters, and I'm thinking, you know, she is so clammed up that she won't let herself believe anything different. If, what would she do without the idea that I'm terrible and I can't be a mother and I don't know what to do? That's her vision, and if she lets that go, her whole world sort of falls apart because that's her belief system.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Marianne, any thoughts?
And so,
What do you think, Marianne?
Well, they're also entitled. They're heavily entitled
to
treat you bad.
That's a good
that's
point.
That's what the narcissists do, is they don't set any boundaries, and they let the kid run the show, and then they also don't respect. Well, that goes along with that. That's probably for another podcast. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the characteristics of parental alienation. So if you, that's why we walk around, tiptoeing around. I was tiptoeing around for 20 years, and I was like, how now? You just jeopardized my job. You know, enough already. You're 30-something years old, and I will not be treated that way. You know, it was just like, enough. I've danced around. I've been doing this, you know, and it hasn't gotten me anywhere, and so then they'll cut you off. But you're right, Marianne. That's one of the characteristics. They are entitled to treat you like this, and you have to take care.
You're breaking in and out, Barbara.
Oh,
your phone is going in and out.
Okay. Oh, I don't know why.
But
that's one of the characteristics. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
I'll put my headset on. You think that will help, the headset?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know.
Marianne,
we hear you better.
Will you speak to that?
Okay.
You know, they feel they're entitled, and they're cruel. The cruelty is another characteristic, right, Marianne?
Yes. Oh, yes.
It's exhausting.
Oh, and it's so hurtful. It's unbelievably
hurtful.
And it's I don't know. I think the family court helps manufacture that as well. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. Yeah. I took a course the last 2 weeks. There have been so many wonderful things people have been offering, and this is an incredible woman. And I was ready to put out my course again that I did the beta test for, and with an organization as well, with Danica. And I thought, oh, this is timing. Let me take her course. And we had to create our mission statement for our course. And everyone was posting, and it's global. And this woman reached out to me from Turkey. And right now she's dealing with this with two little boys. Another woman reached out from the UK. She's a physical therapist. And so by speaking out and not being quiet anymore and tiptoeing around, you know, I'm sacrificing the relationship that I don't have anymore with my daughter, which I realize is because she's back in their father's grasp. And that, for me, my belief is that the universe is conspiring, that there's a bigger mission here. You need to tell your story. You need to use your daughter's life to honor her life by telling the story and help save other lives than just tiptoeing around. As we see, right, Marianne, so many different relationships, all these parents are tiptoeing around with just crumbs being given to them because they want a relationship with their child.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane.
So yeah, we have to always talk about this, talking about it so other people catch on.
Yes.
That, you know, we can't take any crap from our kids either.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So can I just give you
also our goal,
a little bit of
make one point. So our goal, my goal is that we have to empower our children, because many people in this day and age too are not even marrying, and if you can't get along in a relationship, then when you separate, it's even harder. So I feel that we need to start empowering our children so they can, one, start seeing this, be true to themselves. You know, the suicide rates, the self-harm rates are just astronomical. Mm-hmm. And so that's one thing. And then the other thing is to see the signs early on, because I don't know about you, but being in the throes of divorce, I know I'm trying to take care of the children, trying to keep my job, trying to do self-care, be exhausted, help with homework. And you think, oh, yeah, people act like this during divorce. And you're thinking some of these behaviors are just divorce-related, and the red flags were not there. I think pointing out early on the red flags early so that things can be saved, relationships with our children can be saved, because by the time we realize it, oftentimes it's too late.
If I could just make a point here, I didn't have the whole alienation thing done when in the beginning. I mean, it's only been the last year. But, you know, basically my children are products of their – our children are products of the environment, is how they're going to behave. So a lot of behaviors – well, not only are they genetic, but they're also learned behaviors. And so over the course of 5 years, having all three of us, when we were all three in the house together, me and my three boys, we triggered each other. We knew how to push each other's buttons. When I'm with one-on-one, it's fine. But when there's two or more in the home, we can push each other's buttons. And even when there's one, like, so I've had to really set my boundaries. And it's still not easy, even with my youngest. I mean, you know, and then you get the guilt starts to kick in. And, you know, am I not being a good enough mom and dad? And, you know, it's like, and then I have to remind myself, you know, some of this is so ingrained in him that we have to unlearn it. They have to unlearn it. And you have to just stick to, like, how do you punish a 17-and-a-half-year-old? Take their phone? I mean, seriously, there was a time I shut off his service, or I shut off certain parts of his service. But, you know, I mean, he needs a phone. You know, I was punishing myself. So, you know, it
yeah.
comes to a point where you just have to, like, I just would get into my car, go to the beach, and cry and let it all out. And I would just not talk to them. I would just shut down. And as recent as the last couple of weeks, you know, when I just, you know, you're the stable parent is always going to be the punching bag. This I've learned.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're the one that they trust, and you're the one that's always been there, and you're the one that they're going
right.
to let their frustrations out. And I
yes.
open up my mouth, and I point it out, and I'm like, I'm not your punching bag. I am not the bad person here. Okay, you're upset,
mm-hmm.
you're angry. You have therapists. Get on that phone. You have healthy outlets. Go deal in your healthy outlet way, and then, you know, we can talk, you know. But it's very hard. It's like a never-ending thing.
Yeah.
So even if
right,
you're not
alienated.
Right,
it's easy for me to talk about it because I don't have kids in the home anymore, but it was,
right.
you know, you're bringing back memories of when you're in it all the time.
Yeah, right.
And I
oh
think
my
today,
gosh.
In today's
yeah.
age, with phones and social media, it's really, really challenging. So I honor you for being a single mom and three boys.
Thank you.
And you do.
It's
you
not
ha-
easy,
and,
but
and then,
I wouldn't.
Nope.
I wouldn't trade for one split second, you know. I think that I took
mm-hmm.
advantage of having all three of my kids under my, you know, under my care. And, you know, when one left, you know, it opened up my eyes that I should have appreciated. I told myself I should have appreciated it more. But, you know, I know I did the best I could. I'm one person.
Yeah.
And I'm taking care of myself. So, you know, it comes to a point where you just, you know, you do the best you possibly can. You make it very clear that you're here for them, but you're not going to tolerate more abuse. And
yeah, because you're teaching them how to treat women too. You know, and later
well,
on.
You know, they're good to they're pretty
worse.
Good to their girlfriends. They're pretty good to their girlfriends. You know, that hasn't been
uh-huh.
an issue. We have another caller. I think it's Darlene.
Great.
I believe it's Darlene. Let's bring her on. Hi, Darlene.
It's free.
How you doing?
Free. Hello. Fair to be.
Doing?
I'm a lot better than I was yesterday. Yesterday I was just ticked off most of the day.
I saw that. What happened?
I don't think y'all want me to say it right now. So.
Okay. Well, I hope that you got it resolved.
You know. Yeah, I was going to say, we need to open this up to some callers. I'm so glad that you called in, Darlene.
Well, thank you. So what it was, what do you do when there's actually a pedophile in the organization that you're in there and you're there to protect the people and there's one pedophile that's a registered sex offender? That's what I was dealing with, okay. So, and
is that in the
I don't know.
Is that in the school? Where is it?
So,
church.
That's what I was ticked off about, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you
and
have to make it well, very well
reasons.
Known.
Huh?
You have to open your mouth and make it known.
I did, boy, and I did in a group today, too. And Zoom meeting, I just wasn't going to let them shut me off.
Good.
I'm like, I'm here to protect everybody, and if I'm not there doing that, then I'm failing my job. You know, if y'all shut me up, we all got to be ashamed of ourselves for letting this person in there. We are all guilty for him being in here and not protecting this woman. And I was so mad about it. I said, I'm not going to shut up till we all realize that there's a certain problem right here that should have never happened to this individual.
Mm. Well, good for you.
Yeah.
Good for
yeah,
you.
Because
and that's
her
you
kids,
are having
they tried to contact her kids, okay? Huh?
I'm sorry.
You know, just for having these conversations, thank you for that's why this is so important, the work you're doing, Bailey, and the work you're doing there, Ann, so that there's platforms to be able to speak to this we take for granted that people have common sense, or that, but being complacent and not talking about these things for all these years has allowed the people to get away with so much, and we can't do that. So it takes courage to do what you did, and for all of us to be able to be open and speaking about these, all of these difficult issues that impact our children, that impact all of us in very negative ways. It's not okay.
Yeah. Right. Let me explain to you, Darlene is part of our advocate network. We go way back from a different platform that I was a host.
I'm not a host there.
Right. We're no longer part of that organization. But Darlene is now a host on this platform, Friends Network. She has a show what night?
Tomorrow night, matter of fact.
So we're all
here supporting
each other.
I saw all those listed. What was it called? Yeah, what is it called?
So those are all different. We are all different
from
people.
From Tears of Triumph. But they don't have me on the list on that advertisement thing.
I see your music over here, and I by mistake played it a couple of times. So
yeah, I wrote
you're
that
here,
song.
But, oh, I have to
Darlene,
listen to it.
Darlene, what's your topic? What is your topic again?
Mine is For Tears to Triumph. It's the name of my talk show. And the person I'll let his name known, so make sure y'all do not have him as a friend and y'all block him. His name is Peter Elsley.
Okay. Okay, thank you. We all need to know that. So basically, and I usually at the end of the show, I do my thank you, but we have this woman, Jo Cock, who was also part of this other organization that we were all part of, that we were all hosts, and I did all this social media and everything. And we all left for whatever reason, and Jo Cock actually started doing a show, and she got this Blog Talk Radio time. And when I had a co-host, Charlie, who helped me start my Never Give Up show, when I decided to finally leave, and he had left, you know, he said, Jo has 7 days opened, you know, and she's not using it. She's very busy with, she lives in Oregon, and she's working on changing reform of the child protective, the child something, what is she working
protective
on?
Protective services? Darlene?
No, there's a something with the children, something with the children, maybe the foster care system, I don't know, something to do with children. I can't believe I forgot. But
right.
So she's been working really hard, and she has enough time, and she's willing to give us, she's been paying. She has got an amazing rate, and she's willing to give us the time. So I was the first one to start, and then Charlie took a day or two. I don't know if he's really being consistent with it because he's working and doing so many things and involved in so many amazing projects. And I started, and then I suggested to a couple of other people, hey, you know, you want to take some of the time, you know, then all these other people came, and we've all, you know, managed to start doing, you know, our shows. So that's the network. It's blogtalkradio.com/friendstalk.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody that's on there has the name of their show on there. So
I saw that. Yeah. That's why I was.
Mine's not on that flyer, though, Bailey. Mine's never been added.
Who?
Mine has never been added to that flyer.
So you have to go. You have to go to Charlie for that.
Yeah. He's
Did
busy
you send
though.
Him
you know,
your
so I don't
logo.
Try to.
Right. Well, maybe you can reach out to Joe. I don't know. But anyway, Marianne wanted to let everybody know that she had to go, and she was so glad to be able to be on for as long as she was. So thank you, Marianne, for hooking me and Barbara up. Barbara, you and I have so much in common. And
we need to get together personally. Yeah, I'll head down
definitely.
There. We can meet.
We're neighbors. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. So let me ask you, you know, one thing that you were talking about and with your son is that, you know, when we talk about how they don't know how to deal with some of the different things. And I believe mindfulness and teaching skills so that when there's a lot of angst or anxiety, or you're learning how to calm yourself down, how to make decisions, how to quiet your mind, is such a huge skill. And that's one thing I'm bringing to either survivors of suicide or people dealing with parental alienation, because you know what? It never goes away. Those things stay, and what you're dealing with. It's like a marathon. And so I realized, yeah, going to support groups, yeah, doing this, reading, personal growth. And that's a lot of work all the time, too. And what I found is now I've gotten some Reiki practitioner. I'm a 1 and 2 Reiki. And so I put a package together for people that are dealing with parental alienation or as a survivor of suicide or emotional abuse, that they could have like 2 Reiki sessions a month and then a weekly other session that's a tapping session, because we have to manage our nervous systems. And so when you talked to introduce me to, I mean, nutrigenomics, you know, we have to keep our bodies healthy. And then you talked about your exercising and keeping fit in the beginning. When I was dealing with the grief, I did a lot of spinning. I was spinning, you know, on the cycling at the gym 3 or 4 times a week. And your cells hold all of that angst and all of that trauma. And you can't think about anything else when you're really doing a good spin. That's why Peloton has become so popular now with everyone else.
Right.
You know, it just got all of that spent energy and anxiety. So I really believe that, and I've been doing research with trauma healing and training in that area. So moving your muscles, moving and thinking in different ways, because our brains are on fight or flight all the time. When you have 3 children that are dealing with stuff, when I, you know, I was on pins and needles what was going on with my daughter and not having access to my daughter and making decisions with the other parent, I would run into the back of cars in Orlando, like my mind thinking, who else can I call? What else can I do? What other services are there? What am I missing? How can I, you know, I'd be outside sales and in between driving, and my mind would just not stop or not be able to sleep. And so I really feel that the coping mechanism of meditations and mindfulness and Reiki energy and moving your body in whatever type of exercise and mindfulness and tapping on your, when you do that, and I would make it specific in groups to either parental alienation, to, you know, emotional abuse. It really hits those pressure points in your body, and it shifts things, and it gives you relief as opposed to, you know, going to alcohol, going to drugs, going to antidepressants. What are ways of coping? And really, after all these years, those are the ways that have helped me the most, and also being able to talk about it. But, you know, in the night and those lonely times, we have to have other skills to quiet our nervous system, because that's when we can think, that's when we can get direction, and we can, it's vital for us to have sleep, to rest your body. That kind of stress becomes de-stress and disease. And, you know, being stressed really does have a huge impact on your health. So that's why I've married the two. I started off really with physical components of things that we're taking and putting into our body, but we can't separate that from the emotional wellness that we all are dealing with. And right now, everybody's dysregulated. So when you have, you know, all of this kind of situation and abuse going on, everything is heightened even more so than it was before. And our children are feeling it. Marriages are either getting stronger or they're falling apart, or couples are taking things out on each other. So we're in some pretty crazy times. Wouldn't you agree, Bailey?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, when they're young adults, it's so hard. When they're young adults, it's so hard to,
direct, guide them, or is that what you're...
Well, I've gotten my son, I've done everything in the book. I mean, everything that's out there. As we speak, he should be on a Zoom with his therapist, and she's really great, and she's trying to get him into a group therapy also. He has to put the work in too. It's not just medication.
Yes.
It's not just your mindset. It's unfortunately when you're so stuck in this negative frame of mind and this pattern, you know. So it's been really tough, but it's her journey.
You know, it's her journey. Like, until she's ready to do the work, I've done the work, and the work doesn't stop. You know, it's always ongoing, but I can feel such a huge difference. But I went through the pain, and I've done this hard work, and so many people are not willing to do the work. And I know Marianne's done a lot of work, and those are the people that I want to be friends with and to connect with, and people like you, because we're moving forward. Yes, we have these circumstances, but in the end, once they're adults, and even when I talk about my daughter taking her life, we have free will. And she was 15, and she refused people to help her. She refused any help that that I could give her, and she was very stubborn. And, you know, in the end, someone has a choice. It's their journey, and we can only help them with resources and model the behavior. But as moms, you know, and parents, we suffer for our children, right? We want the best for them.
Yes. So I want to go back, if you don't mind, to when you're – your daughter that committed suicide, was she in her father's custody at that time?
Yeah, well, you know what happened? It's so crazy. My ex-husband just wouldn't cooperate in any regard. Like, at first he wasn't even taking them for the visitation, and then he would do things like, you can't come. My kids were in a Catholic school in Orlando, and it was like, Mom, you can't come to graduation because Dad's going to be there, because he set down this whole law that if you're anywhere, I'll never talk to anyone you talk to. I'll never go where you go. And we had these two little kids. So I'm going, and I go, well, I didn't make that rule, and I'm not saying that your father can't go, and I even substituted at that school and stuff. And it was like, you can't go, Mom, because Dad's not going to go. So I was always being put in this position like I'm the bad person. So when I talked to my attorneys and everything, they said, he said, you know, maybe you should think about switching the residential custody. So I talked to the priests, I talked to their teachers, and I made this decision, and that's, I never thought of parental alienation. He was playing all these games, but I didn't know anything about parental alienation, and I never thought he would do something like this. And so, but it's so much power and control and ego. And so they were in, then he was blocking, saying they don't want to see you. But my daughter was helping out so much.
You had 50-50 custody?
No, because they didn't really have 50-50 back then. I had major custody, and then he had visitation like every other weekend and one day a week type of thing, which he didn't always honor. And you know what? And that's one thing I did wrong. I was like, that's not fair. Like, I was pushing, and I should have just – Leonard alone and taking care of him. But my daughter was a very difficult child. They're exhausted. Mm. But I shouldn't have, I think I was trying to have control of the situation, like, that's not fair, and you're supposed to take them. And, you know, I was fighting that because I was so sick of being controlled by this person, and I really should not have done that. And I, in hindsight, I should have moved away to our property in Vero Beach, and, you know, knowing what I know now, but
with,
I wanted the father
with
their
the
life.
Kids.
Yeah.
So we make so many mistakes.
Yeah. We switched it, but we don't, yeah. There's forks in the road, and then you make the best decision at the time. And so then they were more in his
Darlene,
custody.
Darlene wanted to say something, if you don't mind.
Yes. No, not at all. Please.
Yes. I was abused by my ex-husband as well as, you know, child abuse, but right now we're talking about the domestic abuse.
Uh-huh.
And the police went ahead and did let him continue to hit me, even though they had the abuse laws. And
oh, my
gosh.
They said
he could hit me as long as he didn't kill me. And then they come back another time after he threatened to kill me and said, we can't do that until he actually does kill you. You think I was going to stick around for that? But then a police officer showed up at my house one day out of blue and just told me that if I was going to leave, I better not take my kids with me or they'll arrest me for kidnapping.
You know, the laws and everything are so crazy that we try to navigate and stay safe and keep our kids safe and keep ourselves safe. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Yes, it is.
And then
what do you
like,
do when you...
We all know situations where they say until you're hurt, you know, they can't do anything, right? Until they see something and they don't know anything about emotional abuse, right? Or they need to see evidence or else they won't put a restraining order and people are killed.
And see, they saw I had a broken collarbone and I had a busted lip and a black eye.
Oh my gosh. What state were you in?
Alabama.
And what year was that?
This was before 1998, but they still had the abuse laws, you know?
It's just, there's no words. I'm so sorry that you've been through all that. I'm so sorry. And that's what happens. We don't even trust the law enforcement. I didn't trust the courts. And so I know about you, but I became more isolated because I couldn't even trust the system. At the beginning, I'm like, oh, they're going to see, and I'll prove this. And I'm writing everything down and keeping copious notes, and none of it mattered. And you know, and the law didn't protect me.
Well, me too, you know. So
yeah,
when we filed
really
for divorce. What made me
What's
finally leave? Can I tell you what made me leave?
Yeah.
I did not end up, I did leave the kids behind, which I really hated. I really immensely hated that. But it was a choice between me staying and my kids end up stabbing their daddy to protect me or me leaving.
Uh-huh. Wow.
So I left for my kids because they were taking knives around to protect me.
Wow. Well,
I just want to give out a number. We have another.
Yes.
My kids are like that also. I want to give out our phone number again, 516-531-9643. If you're listening, we'd love to hear from you. We have another 30 minutes, 516-531-9643. Please call in and join and support our amazing guest this evening.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you.
So tell me,
you know what? My daughter took her life and hung herself in my former husband's home while he was home. He was home when she did that in his house. But I'm, you know, it's just, and the laws and then oh, it's just the stories go on. When I go back and I have to, and I look back at things, I'm like, this is absolute insanity. And the courts and the judges and the attorneys, it's insanity. And we're just trying to protect our children and ourselves and get away from a difficult, abusive situation. Do you think that things have changed a lot, Darlene and Bailey, from all the people that you've interviewed and been with? And do you think that things are starting to change now?
I don't think that they changed all that much, because around 2005, when I had another boyfriend who lied when he was going to hurt me, but he didn't go ahead and hurt me, and he lied because he was going to jail drunk, and he lied and said I tried to hurt him. But there was no way I was going to take the fall for, you know, and he had me to go to jail for a false thing, okay? And I was like, I was not, and his daddy said, well, if you would have loved him, you would have took the fall for it.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And so, it's kind
but
of crazy.
You know,
and they arrested us both, okay? They arrested us both. And the problem was, I was the one who didn't have the finances. He had the finances.
Right.
He could get out. He could do whatever. He'd get the lawyer stuff, keep me in jail, and I just take all the blame. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And yet I was the innocent one. So this is still not fair.
That's right. That's right.
So in what I've seen, there's nothing that's been consistent, but there are states that have taken on laws, different laws. Like, for instance, Jennifer's Law, which is about coercive control. The state of Connecticut has implemented that recently. They also implemented a law about emotional abuse now is a reason to receive a restraining order. I know that I had a guest last week, I believe, who had a law brought into her, where she lives. I totally forgot. It slipped my mind. She got something to do with the statute of limitations of sexual abuse, and she had a bill that was put into law. I'm looking for her, my notes on the show last week.
Talking about Jillian?
Jillian. Oh my God, I'm so bad.
They worked together in Louisiana, I believe.
Yeah. You know, there are little changes. I mean, first of all, narcissistic personality disorder has been made way, I mean, and 10 years ago, 8 years ago, nobody knew about it.
Right.
And so, you know, yes, definitely we've made headway with that. Definitely there's been changes and there's been awareness just since I've started advocating for mental health and domestic violence and suicide awareness prevention. So I do believe, you know, there have been some headway, and it's really the people out there that have been hurt that are advocating, that are using their pain to help others and to bring awareness.
Yes.
Can I bring up a classic case, for instance? For instance, the Gabby Petito, you know, they didn't see the signs, the warning signs, and they had them stopped.
Yeah, so unfortunately, they get murdered,
you know.
Yeah, huh? So obviously there are cases, unfortunately, that laws are put into place after there's a murder instead of a murder, which is why we're here. Yes, there, so many people saw things that didn't look right, and now they're coming forward and saying it, and they were stopped by police, you know? And yes, there were a lot of mistakes that happened. And there are many situations like that. There's no question. But from that situation, there'll be another law, okay, come out. And, you know, it's another learning lesson and another law, and hopefully it'll be implemented. What I have such a hard time understanding, and like I was telling you the other day, Barbara, how I'm trying to help in my state, in our state, help get involved in laws being implemented and changed. You know, why is it one state at a time? Why doesn't it become federal laws, and then from a federal law, why isn't it made into a brought down into a state law that has to be implemented? And unfortunately, from what I understand now, is it's a state by state thing, and you have to get sponsors. So it has to be a House rep and a Senator rep to come to that will come together and have to start, and you have to get a committee. It's a whole process, and it's unbelievable.
I know. That's why for me, just even creating awareness so people start talking, people start noticing, to me, in a way, grassroots and social. It's interesting having had a Clubhouse talk today. A gentleman was on from Canada, and it turned out that his son actually took his life 5 years ago, and he didn't know if it was in regard to parental alienation or not. But it turns out, after listening for a long time, he contributed something so important, I feel, that he's in advertising and marketing, and he said, you know what? Social pressure is the biggest change agent there is. You can create laws. You can create different things. And he brought up, like, the seatbelt law. And he goes, people don't put their seatbelts on for being worried that they're going to be thrown in jail or getting a ticket. They are more inclined to put their seatbelt on because of social pressure. And he talked about a number of different incidences of change. And so by people talking or seeing things, by people seeing, hey, this isn't right the way you're treating this child, because they could put all those laws in place, but if nobody enforces those laws, they're meaningless. And look how long it takes to get a law to happen. Too many people are, and children are hurt and dying, and by the time a law gets passed, and then how many years does it take before all the law enforcement or, you know, even our social workers, everybody is overworked and their portfolios are too big. You know, these are going to do this anyway. So, but if the teachers are aware or other, when people start talking about either all the things we're talking about, they start noticing, why do you have a black eye? Why do you, you know, why are your clothes dirty? Why are you, so by even having this conversation, a Clubhouse conversation, and, you know, I say that with parental alienation, the teacher, well, why is your mom, just because you say that, you know, you've been trained to say that, or let me ask more questions, or maybe that's really not the case, and I'm judging this incorrectly because I don't have all the information. So I think that's where the change can come faster.
Can I just stop you here? We have another caller. I don't recognize the number, so I'm going to bring them on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Welcome to Never Give Up Show. Hello?
Hi, that might be just me. That might be me. My name is April, and I was trying to get on, so I'm listening to Barbara's testimony, so thank you.
Hi, April. Is this the April I know?
Yes, it is, Barbara.
Thank you, April. April has a lot of stories.
Oh, well, I'd love for her to contact me, and we'd love to have her on the show.
Thank you. I would just like to add here, if I can.
Sure.
Barbara's strength, her resilience, and her grace through all of this mm-hmm. has empowered me to keep pushing and fighting the good fight for my family, for my children. I can't imagine the extremes that she's gone through to get to where she is mm-hmm. today, but Barbara, you've just been a testimony of just the love and the heart of a mom, and just as a woman, as a friend. So I honor you, and I thank you for who you are in going through this dark time of your life, and you're still such a light to me, and I know to many. Thank you, Barbara.
Oh, thank you so much,
Barbara,
April.
You've already had impact mm-hmm. on someone, and that's what the show's all about, reaching, one
person.
And April
knows Marianne. April knows Marianne mm-hmm. as well. Marianne was on a little bit earlier. April, I don't know if you got to hear her, but April has quite a journey, April, and if I can, by speaking out, and you empower me. Everybody that speaks mm-hmm. this way empowers me to be stronger and to take the high mm-hmm. road and to be an example and to do the best we can with our life, because I think there's so many of us that they can't fight this fight, and they mm-hmm. Put the blankets over their head, or they're not willing mm-hmm. to do the work because it isn't easy. And so for us that can turn our pain into possibilities or into, mm-hmm. For me, it's healing to be of service and to speak about this helps me. I can't make change happen. And so, but everyone doesn't have that ability or that drive to do that. So as you said, Bailey, the people that have walked through this that want to make change and make something from the pain they've lived through, we're the advocates. Mm-hmm. And April's an advocate. Mm-hmm. And Bailey, maybe you can speak to it. I don't know what if this relates to you, but a lot of us, too, you're afraid of your former spouse knowing where you are, hurting you, harassing you, and all of that kind of thing. Maybe you could shed some light on that.
Well, so, that was my part of my punishment, if you would say, for not taking my ex-husband back. So I have dealt with harassment and stalking going on 6 years now. And I have a restraining order, permanent restraining order in place. He's violated it. He's left the state of Florida on probation. There's a warrant for his arrest. I actually have court at the end of this week because he violated the restraining order by contacting me. He has no regard for the law. And I tried to stay, obviously my show is public. As mm-hmm. far as my social media, I try and stay as private as possible. I've had some wacky people befriend me, and I have to really try and be careful who I take on as friends. But through groups, I'm public,
mm-hmm.
people can send me a message and say, hey, whatever. I could choose to befriend them or not. I always check to see who our mutual friends are and stuff like that. But I made a decision that I have to live my life. And he's going to do what he wants to do, but he's not going to dictate and control my life anymore. And
mm-hmm.
I'm safe as far as, do I think he's going to hire a hitman to kill me? He doesn't have the money, Do I think he has friends still in Florida? Seriously, they'll go right to him. They'll know it's him. I mean, mm-hmm. that would be the stupidest thing. For him, I am taking gun lessons, and I have a license to carry. As long as I have kids living here, I will not purchase a gun, and I'm taking a lot of lessons. I'm really learning before I get to the point where I feel ready. But I've empowered myself in many, many ways. You know, people know my story. People know, you know me, know my kids. I mean, he would have to be absolutely out of his friggin' mind to try and harm me physically through somebody else. So in that sense, I don't live in fear anymore. As far as the internet, I don't even look anymore. The last time I looked was when somebody, an ex-girlfriend, contacted me because she saw something on his Instagram that really concerned her, and then I saw, like, a year and a half worth of stuff and, you know, freaked out and went to the police, and, of course, they did nothing. But, you know, I realized that's what he wants, you know. I don't have babies. I don't have to have any – I don't have contacts. I don't have anything. You know, he's remarried. Live your life. Enjoy it. Be happy. Leave me the hell alone.
Mm-hmm.
Let me live my
life. No,
sorry. But there are people, there are people, unfortunately, that are in situations. They share custody or, you know, different kind of situations. And you have to protect yourself. That's priority. And there are people out there that I follow, especially on Instagram, that have blogs, and they post amazing stuff, but they stay anonymous. They use, like, you know, fake names, or not even, or like they'll use one is abuse is abuse, or, you know, different things, different other things. People are middle of situations, so they have to stay. But the most important thing, obviously, yes, you have to stay protected. You have to make sure, you know, we learn when we go through domestic violence and you go to group therapy and you go to therapy, the first thing they say is, are you safe? Can we call you? Is your email secure? You know, all these things, you have to take all those steps. And I had to go through that. I went through all that. I had to change all my passwords and rechange on my password and start new accounts because we're so connected in that way. So,
but now,
you know,
your children, so how have your sons looked at that? That's what I was wondering, knowing all this is going on. How have your sons handled that?
Say that one more time. I didn't hear you.
So how have your sons handled? So obviously, they're aware that you're having to do all this, or that your father, your husband, former husband, would, you know, all the stuff that, you know, is going on. Do your sons handle all that, or notice that, or
so they at this point, you know, two of them have nothing to do with him, and that's by their choice. You know, my youngest is 17 and a half; he has a phone. You know, I believe he has him blocked. I don't know. I know he has not had anything to do with him in years. My other one has reached out to him over the years. It never ends well, and I think that he gave up. So they have seen it. Children that have witnessed abuse are abused, and so they've been through it themselves. So you know. Basically, that's really, you know, they're old enough to make their own.
And so they're dealing with it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but they've put into place ways to make sure that they're safe. We have another 850 caller, so I'm going to bring them on. April, you're still open, so if you want to pipe up, welcome to Never Give Up Show.
Hello.
Hi.
April's son just listening in.
Oh, very nice. Thank you. Did you want to say anything?
So, go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm just listening. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for coming on. Yeah, I sent a copy of the numbers to my daughter and to my son, my oldest. They're adults now, and they've lived through the dynamics of my divorce and just how one of my sons is just not the same anymore. And he's no longer connected to our family. And for me as a mom, mm-hmm. a part of me died.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because my son,
don't give up.
My children were mm-hmm. raised just with me, and I homeschooled them. So he was not in our lives physically, but he still was able to manipulate my son so that he's no longer even a part of my life. You know, and that really cuts as a mom and having going through the abuse and feeling hopeless and helpless. So it's nice to know we're not alone.
We have to talk because I just went through that with my oldest. So we really should connect, you know, another time and have you come on the show because, you know, as a young adult, you know, after all these years, me taking care of him and him living with me and having gone through everything with me, you know, he decided to go be with his dad. And I know what that feels like, but don't give up hope because, you know, they are a piece of us. They are like our limb, and deep down, you know, we're still their mom. I mean, they know that we'll always be there. So, you know, I pray for you, but I feel that you shouldn't give up, that he won't ever come back into your life.
Yeah. Yeah, Barbara's been a big role in that.
I will connect,
so thank you for saying that.
I will connect both of you. Yeah, that's a lot in common.
And it's so nice that your son called in. My son was listening before, my 17-and-a-half-year-old. He's the only one home right now, and he tries to support my shows and help listen. He actually was my first guest. By choice. It was less than a year ago. He was 16 and a half, and I asked his therapist what she thought, and she said, look, he's a big boy, you know, he's been through a lot of crap, and if he wants to be your guest, he could be your guest. And the show was called Domestic Violence Through the Eyes of a Child.
I love that. I think seeing the perspective from the children
mm-hmm.
is really insightful. And I really honor that they're into, that he's able to speak about it and that you would have him as a
mm-hmm.
guest. I think it's really important to involve our children because then other children can hear it.
Mm-hmm. And all my family called in, and friends called in to be supportive that night. It was incredible. I'll send you the link. It's on the Never Give Up show on Blog Talk Radio.
Uh-huh.
The link that led you to the show, but also it's on SoundCloud.
I could
send Barbara the link, and she could forward it to you, or she could connect us, and I could send it to you. But you can go listen to all my shows. I think maybe five of them I haven't had a chance to upload yet. Because I do them right after the show. I go to SoundCloud and upload it. But when I started doing it in the beginning, it took time, and I never got to do a few of them. So, yeah.
Okay, thank you for
about
that.
A minute left. So, Barbara, any closing words? April, thank you so much for calling in and being a support. And, you know, once you join listening to the shows or, you know, being part of, you know, our community, as Barbara has seen, you have a major support system. And, you know, you can't get through this without the support. That's one of the biggest factors. And the isolation is horrible. I had that in the beginning. But I had my family. I was very lucky.
Nice.
I'm one of five siblings. And I had my family and my parents live close by. So I had that support. I didn't have a community support. I had my parents, my lifelong friends that all stopped having what to do with me when I was married, all came back into my life. And they're one of my biggest supports. So, you know, it's very important. So
that is
closing
really
words.
Great, because I'll tell you what, I don't have that. I'm sort of like having this and gone through this and being open about it or walking through it. It's like I'm looked at like I have the plague, or we don't want to be associated with these events that happen to you. Instead of being there to support me, I'm really sort of shunned by them. And so these support groups and speaking out is so important, because,
mm-hmm.
yeah, that when you're isolating, it's not good. And so that's wonderful that you've had that, and it's so vital. But a lot of people don't, because maybe family
right.
dynamics and dysfunction is a mess. So,
right.
You know,
so I have to close out the show. I wanted to let everybody know that I will post the link to Barbara's book. Please remember me, Mom, in the book. Please remember me, right? Is that what
yes,
it's called?
Yes. So the name of the book is called Ignite Possibilities.
Oh,
there's
Ignite.
A number of stories
okay.
in there.
Okay.
And mine is Please Remember Me, Mom. And I don't want my child to be forgotten. Yeah.
Right. And you have strength, because, I mean, I can't even imagine not, you know, we didn't really get to delve into any part of that whole loss of your child and how you've coped and all those things. And maybe we can do another, you know, another show with that.
A different
you know,
topic.
Maybe Suicide Awareness
mm-hmm.
Month. Yeah. But, you know, to be able, and you were not there and you couldn't protect through that. I mean, that I can't even imagine. After everything I have been through, I can't even imagine people that can have the strength to go through that. So, like April said before, and she's muted now because I really have to end the show, but, you know, you really are an inspiration. And we are going to connect more, and I posted the show in so many different groups. I will some of them I can invite you to. I was trying to do it. Some of them you just, you know, try, you know, request to be part of those groups. They're great support groups. And, you know, just my page is all full of support. So my Facebook, Emma Nathan, and, you know, you're now part of the family. And April, God willing, you know, I hope that she, you know, connects with us. And, you know, there is support out there.
I'll make sure
and
that
you make
two
friends.
Are connected, yeah.
Thank you. And just, you know, it's all about networking and you become friends. Like Marianne, she's our friend, you know, and we're there
mm-hmm.
to support her, and she's there to support us. And Darlene, I know Darlene a long time, and I remember when she was, you know, just sharing a little here, a little there, and now she's a host and an author.
Wow.
You know, so you know, it is what it is, and it's about never shutting up and never giving up and keep on going and fighting the fight, because we are all gonna win this fight. And again, thank you, Barbara, for last being my guest. It was my honor and a pleasure, and I'm your new friend. You're my new friend, and I'm gonna wrap this up. Okay, I'm gonna have to mute you, but we'll be in touch. I want to thank Marianne again for hooking me up with Barbara. It was a great connection. Everything happens for a reason. Again, Charlie, for helping me get this show started and pushing me to be out there on my own. Joe Clark for giving me this blog talk radio show time. And April for calling in, her son for calling in, Darlene for calling in, for all my listeners out there. For listening and supporting the Never Give Up show. And really, there is hope. I believe there's hope. And I believe that change will happen. And never give up. Have a wonderful night.
This sometimes you can get things done. Blind adherence that has conquered some, and nobody wants to know you now, and nobody wants to show you how bad you lost on your own. You can never surrender, and if you're you can see, you can see light, 'cause no one